Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Our subject is fibromyalgia, and we're talking to the author of a book called The Fibro Fix, also the host of an upcoming summit that you don't want to miss. If you or a loved one suffers from fibromyalgia, it's just going to be a wealth of information about this subject, the Fibro Fix Summit. And we'll provide some more details at the end of this this segment on how you can get involved with that. But first, with Dr. Brady, you're talking a little bit about certain supplements that may be beneficial for fibromyalgia. And, you know, I know that you're sophisticated enough to understand that some patients just don't respond to supplements. It's not about supplements. But often supplements can support patients with fibromyalgia. So what are some of those supplements?
Well, of course, as we talked about in the first segment, the key is to get the diagnosis correct, right? Because, you know, making the assumption that someone comes in and says, "Doc, I have fibromyalgia," that they actually have classic fibromyalgia, this pain processing disorder in the central nervous system, is a very bad assumption because, you know, two-thirds of them or more are misdiagnosed. So the supplements that can be helpful are directly related to what their problem actually is. So assuming they actually do have what we would call classic fibromyalgia, this pain processing disorder, we do know that these people's central nervous system is very deficient or low in the production of serotonin, which is a key neurotransmitter that changes the way we perceive pain, the way we go into deep stages of quality sleep, whether we have good mood or feel depressed. So raising up serotonin can be very useful in these patients, and this is why two of the FDA-approved drugs are manipulators of serotonin, along with norepinephrine. But I tend to like to use serotonin precursors to try to, as a trial, get serotonin up. And I tend to use 5-hydroxytryptophan, or 5-HTP for short, because it's locked into that pathway going to serotonin. Some people do use tryptophan, the amino acid that's a little further away from serotonin. But 5-HTP can be very, very useful in getting serotonin up. And we use that throughout the day at intervals, but we use a heavier dose at night to help drive the person into deeper stages of what we call delta wave or restorative sleep. And with that in the evening, we'll use some sustained release melatonin. A lot of times through the day, particularly if they have a lot of anxiety and or panic attack even or mind racing at night, we'll use a fermented GABA. So we'll use the neurotransmitter GABA. And then we're also using a lot of sort of things that are calming to the nervous system. So calming neurotransmitter building blocks or precursors. So we can use things like L-theanine, for instance. We can use magnesium 3-8. But we can use botanicals that are known to be calming, adaptogenic, helping the body deal with stress. But some adaptogens are stimulating, things like Tanax ginseng and rhodiola and licorice. We don't use those. We use more calming botanical adaptogens, things like Withania somnifera, often known as ashwagandha, but the actual name is Withania somnifera, somnolence, right? So it's a bit sedating. But if we're going to use
it's interesting because it's energizing, but it also has sort of a calming effect. So it's not like drinking coffee, right, you know, or something like that.
Right, right. It's not a hypnotic. It doesn't make you groggy or drowsy. And that could be true of the GABAergic herbs as well, which can be very useful. Things that hit GABA receptors, like valerian, passion flower, melissa, or lemon balm, they can be very useful as well. German chamomile is a wonderful calming botanical. So those are very helpful, but we also try to make sure we promote proper sleep. So, you know, like I said, the melatonin, GABA at night, but also a little something to eat right before bed, actually, can be helpful in sustaining you through sleep so you don't get blood sugar irregularities while you're sleeping that are waking you up. But we do sleep hygiene, so we get people to bed at the same time and up at the same time in the morning every day of the week, to include weekends and weekdays, respecting light-dark cycles. So we try to have them in really nice, bright, you know, sunlight with a lot of blue spectrum light early in the morning and in noon and through the early afternoon. But in the evening, we want to keep them out of blue spectrum, you know, shortwave violet light. So that means getting off the iPads and the devices.
There are even computer adaptations. I noticed on my new iPad,
yeah,
there's something where you can set it past a certain time, and you know, if you're addicted to your iPad and you want to read it late, it'll block out some of that blue light, blue
yeah,
spectrum.
Yeah, there are
light.
great apps out there. You can just search blue blocking apps or light blocking apps, and there are many for iPad, iPhone, for your laptops. And basically, as the clock gets later in the day, it automatically adjusts the screen tones to pull the blue, which appears to you as more white. Like when we see that white screen of a computer monitor, it's actually bluish white. That's the kind of light we want to avoid as it's getting late into the night. And it makes the screen more orange. But, you know, a lot of the new energy-efficient light bulbs and light fixtures, you know, with LED technology and some of these fluorescents, are even way worse in blue spectrum light than old-fashioned incandescent light. So this is part of the light pollution that is creating a lot of the sleep disturbance as well. But supplements, you know, equally important supplements are for energy production. This can be for patients who actually have fibromyalgia or many who are misdiagnosed because they have profound mitochondrial energy deficiency. Mm-hmm. So things like CoQ10 and ribose and magnesium and B vitamins and L-carnitine at high dose can be useful. Things that help mitochondrial density, things like something called PQQ, for instance, that can increase the number of mitochondria.
Right. PQQ is a new nutrient that's on the scene. We're planning to do a special feature for Intelligent Medicine listeners on PQQ. Actually, I think Michael Murray is going to be joining us to talk about that because he seems to be big on that, on the potential of that new supplement. Something that's intrigued me lately for mitochondrial energy is nicotinamide riboside. Have you had any experience working with patients suffering from fatigue or fibromyalgia using that mitochondrial enhancer?
Yeah, it can be very, very helpful in mitochondrial, you know, energy production and electron transfer in energy biochemistry. So, yeah, there's a lot of good rationale and actually good data on using that in fatigue-related disorders for sure.
Good. So those are some of the possibilities. And again, some people say, well, what supplement shall I take for fibromyalgia? That's overly simplistic because we know that fibromyalgia, a diverse set of conditions can lead to the symptoms that masquerade as fibromyalgia. Some patients respond beautifully to supplements, others don't. You have to kind of figure your way through it, as you describe beautifully in your book.
I would stress if they do have classic fibromyalgia, you know, attacking it from the biochemical side, whether it's with drugs or herbs or supplements, that can all be important, but fundamentally, there's sort of a retraining that has to occur with the nervous system and how the body deals with stressors of life and even just sensory information at that point with some of these patients. And really, even a more important aspect is the cognitive behavioral therapies that have to be done. So you really have to work with patients to find something that resonates for them, that sort of retrains their nervous system and retrains their stress response. So we use some intensive in-office therapies in the beginning. So we'll use brain mapping or EEG-directed biofeedback to get people to retrain their brain into more calming brainwave patterns. Mm. We'll use heart rate variability. Mm. But eventually, we want to train them to do these things on their own. And that's what these therapies do. There's great heart rate variability monitors you can get for your iPhone that you can just practice it intermittently for very short intervals throughout the day, which can be helpful. But we also work with patients, and the book goes into a lot of these things, simple things like guided imagery, progressive relaxation. You can go further and go into mindfulness meditation. You can do certain forms of yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong. You know, it's interesting, Dr. Hoffman, that every sort of learned culture on the planet other than us, right? So the ones that have been around a long time, you know, whether it's you know, the Asian cultures, you know, like that you see in traditional Chinese medicine, they're doing Qigong or Tai Chi, or in Indian cultures, they're meditating, or they're doing yoga, or even in Hispanic cultures, they observe a siesta, right? They're all doing these different things that are meant to calm the person and sort of reset the day's stress so that they're refreshed and reinvigorated for a new day. In the modern Western world, you know, particularly in the United States as the flagship of that sort of mentality, we don't do any of that stuff. You know, we just go, never shut off, always have devices pinging at us now. It's a lot worse than the last 10 years with all of these, you know, people being essentially attached to their device right till the time they go to bed. It's sensory overload 24/7. Even when they're sleeping, they're not sleeping, you know, deeply and rejuvenating. And is it any wonder that we're breaking down?
Indeed. We're running our bodies like 4x4 off-road vehicles, trying to, you know, put the pedal to the metal. And sometimes that's not the way the body works. The body works in cycles, and the cycles of rest and activity. And sometimes we short shrift that regeneration time. I wanted to ask you also about the connection to the gut, because some of the experts who will be talking in the summit, I happen to know Dr. Jerry Mullen quite well, who's been a frequent guest on Intelligent Medicine, is big on the gut-brain connection and how the state of your gastrointestinal tract may have an impact on conditions like fibromyalgia. We know that patients with fibromyalgia often have irritable bowel syndrome. So is that perhaps a clue to addressing fibromyalgia?
Yeah, you know, in true classic fibromyalgia, there's almost 100% correlation with irritable bowel syndrome, because when we look deep into the dysfunction in the central nervous system, being the brain and the spinal cord, in why you're interpreting things that shouldn't be painful as painful, the same dysfunction and the same neurotransmitter deficiencies and the same peptide excesses are there in the enteric nervous system, which is the nervous system of the gut. So, indeed, irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS, is sort of the equivalent of fibromyalgia, but in the gut. And they go together. It makes sense. And they sort of all part and parcel of the same global dysfunction. So people with classic fibromyalgia generally have a lot of this, you know, kind of IBS symptoms, you know, gas, bloating, distension, cramping and discomfort, either constipation or diarrhea, or alternating both at different times. And there's even some new models of people having aberrant growth or different levels of certain bacteria which can overgrow in the gut, a condition we call dysbiosis. And these bacteria can actually produce toxic metabolites. They can express different proteins, different what we call LPSs, or lipopolysaccharides, which can then influence not only the gut environment, but they can be absorbed systemically, interact with the immune system, and through the gut-brain access, actually, some of these are theorized to be able to penetrate through the blood-brain barrier and actually inflame the immune system of the brain, called the microglia. Mm-hmm. And microglia activation, or inflammation, has been proposed as one of the mechanisms of global pain that can make you hurt all over, sort of a deep-seated brain pain. Now, that does not seem to be the unifying or monolithic cause of what we would call fibromyalgia, because that does not explain why it's so prevalent in females, why it's, you know, much more prevalent in those who have these histories of trauma and fatigue. And there are some people with clear classic fibromyalgia that don't really seem to have a lot of gut problems at all and don't have dysbiosis when we check them, but it seems to be another one of those pathways to the symptoms that would get someone a diagnosis of fibromyalgia.
Indeed. Oh, so what about inflammation? Now, we know that fibromyalgia by definition is when you don't have a, quote, true inflammatory disorder like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. So when you rule those out, sometimes it becomes like the diagnosis of exclusion. It's, you know, you're achy, but you don't have whatever. You don't have Lyme disease. You don't have any of the true inflammatory disorders. But is inflammation a problem, and are there ways to address the inflammation?
Yeah, it's interesting. True classic fibromyalgia is not overtly inflammatory. So you don't, you know, for anybody listening as a healthcare provider, you would not get see reactive proteins that are globally high, or you would not get SED rates that are globally high. You would not have the things that you would classically have, let's say, in an inflammatory autoimmune condition or like a rheumatoid arthritis or something. However, there is some evidence, like I was alluding to just before, that there is microinflammation deep in the brain through microglial activation. So that's very new information. We're still trying to figure out exactly what that means. Is it really in all fibromyalgia? Is it another masquerader of fibromyalgia? Because some of this is activated by these gut, you know, gut-brain mechanisms, and probably other triggers as well, stealth viruses, other stealth pathogens. But it's probably why some of the agents that are known to act on what we call pleomorphic mechanisms, in that they squelch microinflammation deep in tissues. So things like low-dose naltrexone, for instance, is being used a lot in fibromyalgia now, and it's not really acting apparently through its normal blockade of opiate receptors. Opiates, for instance, don't work generally in fibromyalgia pain. So it's probably these known pleomorphic effects of low-dose naltrexone. It's probably one of the reasons vitamin D can also work in global pain, because it also is a pleomorphic agent, and even potentially statin medications, which can cause a lot of myalgia and muscle pain and fatigue. So I'm not saying to use statins for this, but statins also have pleomorphic effects, which they act as micro anti-inflammatories, and it's probably more a source of their benefit than any change in the cholesterol level or the LDL level. But that's another topic. But it's interesting that inflammation is probably playing a role to some degree, but not in the overt sense that we're used to it in overtly inflammatory conditions.
And finally, in our 20,000-foot overview of this subject, because I know you're going to go into it in much greater depth in your book, The FibroFix, and also during the summit, each of these topics will be delved into with great detail. Diet, obviously, may make a difference for some patients. So how does that work?
I think it makes a difference for all patients, because it makes them globally better metabolically and more toward a state of wellness. So I think, you know, cleaning up the diet and eating, you know, all whole fresh foods, preferably organic foods. But, you know, I think the way, you know, even simple things like Michael Pollan and others have said, you know, eat real food, mostly plants, not too much, you know, is sort of sound advice. Although I do find that, you know, not to just jump on the, you know, gluten-free craze here, but I do find that a lot of the field grass grains have the more of a potential to be somewhat antigenic and not be tolerated by the immune system of many people, and it can activate the inflammasome or activate the innate immune response, creating global tissue-based inflammation. Now, this may be a reason for an inaccurate diagnosis of fibromyalgia, but it can still be a source of global pain, fatigue, cognitive dysfunction. So I do often recommend people do a trial of gluten and gluten-containing grain avoidance, and in some cases dairy avoidance. And we do that in our 21-day program up front in the book, just to sort of clear the slate, you know, and clear the palate, if you will, of these immunogenic foods. Because if you feel a lot better on that diet, it's somewhat diagnostic in and of itself, right? So, but really good quality whole foods, not a lot of pesticides and herbicides and junk on them, not a lot of processed foods, taking out the overtly inflammatory ones. Now, if I see someone individually as a patient, I'm actually looking at how their immune response is to the foods that they eat in their diet. So I'm doing an inflammasome test or a referendum on their immune tolerance to foods as part of the normal workup.
And that would be via some sort of allergy test or a trial of elimination?
It's not really an allergy test, although people call them allergy tests
intolerance.
A lot, but I'll use
intolerance.
A cellular response test using, you know, culture counter technology, like an ALCAT test, MRT. There are various vendors out that do that kind of test.
Well, great. That's a wonderful introduction and comprehensive prelude to the FibroFix book and the FibroFix Summit. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Give us some details on how listeners can take part.
Well, I'd love people to go on and check out the book at fibrofix.com. Could learn a lot more about it there. You can even preview the introduction and the first chapter for free. The book comes out July 12th, but if you order it pre-release, I think it's 40% off the cover price now. It's only like 10 or 11 bucks or something. It's incredible information for that amount of money, and it's available. If you go to fibrofix.com, you can launch off to any of the ebook vendors of your choice, so Amazon and Barnes and Noble and Books a Million, and all of them are there. And then if you do pre-order it, you can come back to the site and validate your purchase with the receipt code, and it unlocks a bunch of bonuses for you, a nice hour comprehensive interview specifically in fibromyalgia that I did for people. It'll give you a free e-paper on proper diagnosis of fibromyalgia and other thank yous for ordering the book. So that's on fibrofix.com. But also, you know, learn more about the summit at fibrofixsummit.com, and you can register for free. It's an incredible amount of information. Sometimes you may feel like you're drinking out of a fire hose, but that's okay. You don't have to get all of it. And if you really want to have all of it and have it at your disposal, even share with your healthcare provider, you can, like I said, get it on a flash drive or get streaming access to it whenever you want at your convenience.
And there's opportunities for ongoing community there too, where there will be discussion groups and virtual support for people who are trying different things.
Exactly. Go to fibrofix.com. They can join the FibroFix community, so they'll get my email. They can stay up with blogs. And also my Facebook site is just, Facebook /Dr. David Brady. And I keep pumping out tons of information on a daily basis on all kinds of different health topics, but including fibromyalgia specifically. So that's just Dr. David Brady at Facebook.
Well, congratulations on a very scholarly and careful examination of this complex subject. I'm sure you're going to shed significant light on this for many, many sufferers of this sometimes frustrating and baffling condition, and provide a lot of valuable resources. So more power to you. Keep up the great work.
Hey, thank you, and thank you for being on. You were such a great guest. We decided that you're one of the two out of 35 that we're rolling out as the bonus interview for registering. So if you register, they'll get you right away.
Awesome. But for some of my Intelligent Medicine listeners, that'll just be a busman's holiday. More of me, I'm not sure that they'll want that.
Yeah. Oh, you did a great job. So thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Dr. David Brady, for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.